I think this is that same alternate universe we keep coming back to where everything is just bad.
We end up here a lot.
It's Anywho. A shady place. Really should have a sign or something.
Attention, the following universe you are entering is kind of shitty.
It sucks. Don't come here. We understand why the tourism numbers are low.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside. A show that, well, there was this one time we was playing in Atlanta or Atlantis. I can't quite recall. And that was because we were wet.
Well, there was a lot of gangsters and a lot of fishmen. So I'm thinking it was San Diego.
You know, it may have been San Diego, but we were playing this show wet. Which is where we got the idea for my Hat Is Ruined Blues. That was on our fifth album.
This was nice because we got to drink water for once.
That is true. We did get to drink water for once. It was a very different experience.
That wasn't water, that was
like
vodka.
Beer.
Are you sure? Maybe that's
well,
why we can't...
One's clear and the other isn't, right? Yeah. Vodka's the clear one.
It might explain why we can't remember this story.
First off, it was New Orleans. Second off, it was Mardi Gras. Third off, it was Under the Sea Ball. Fourth, I was the designated driver, so I had to drive your drunk ass home.
We were letting a motor vehicle? What a terrible idea.
It was in the trunk. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's fine.
That's still a step up. We were inside a motor vehicle.
I thought they stopped doing that to us after that thing in Jersey.
If it makes you feel better, Scott was in the trunk. I actually had to duct tape Jim to the top of the car.
Oh, so it was normal then?
Yeah.
Okay.
My name is Scott.
I'm Jim.
I'm Jeff. And I'm the designated driver for this band of idiots.
That is
How
your own fault.
How terrifying is that, folks?
Very.
All right. Pick of the week. Jim, go.
Seriously, you're pitching to me immediately, knowing full well what I'm going into.
Yes.
Soapbox, put that soapbox on the ground, and here we go.
All right, folks. So, a while back, Keiji Inafune, I'm going to assume if you're listening to the show, you probably have a passable understanding of who this guy is. Kind of big guy, kind of made Mega Man, kind of important individual. Anyway, he decided he was going to crowdfund a new Mega Man, but he wasn't going to call it Mega Man. Was really obviously going to be Mega Man, every conceivable way. At the time, I looked at it and I went, dude, don't you have enough fucking money that you couldn't do this yourself? Like, just straight out of the box, couldn't you just fund this yourself? Don't you have enough contacts in the industry? But I was like, nah, you know what? I'm going to let it slide. Maybe I'm just being cynical. Maybe I'm being bitter. It is my way. And, you know, I let it go. I'm like, people gave it a whole bunch of money. I even considered throwing in on it at one point because I was like, yeah, it'd be kind of cool to get in on, but whatever. And then he went and did it again, because he's crowdfunding it again. And I look at this, and I'm like, exactly how much money do you need from people, man? Like, I understand the Mega Man fan base. Some of them have this real weird persecution complex that I just don't get, where it's like Capcom clearly hates us, and it's like, no, guys, you're a niche market. Sorry. Mega Man is functionally a 2D side-scrolling game. Legends 3 was in production, and Nintendo observed the 3DS was tanking and notified, you know, basically every company working on a game for it, and Capcom decided, okay, 3DS isn't selling well. We can try and put out a game on it that the first two, while fan favorites, sold terribly. Well, not really terribly, but they didn't sell great in the grand market scheme. It's a niche market game to begin with. It's probably not going to sell that well, and it's going to be put out on a system that's not selling very well. We could try and push that, or we could kill it. From a business investment point of view, you would kill that. So they killed it.
Because Capcom is the only Japanese video game company that understands sunk costs.
Hey, exactly. You can pour money into a hole. Like, if Capcom is really in the business of throwing away money, like people seem to think, they can give it to me. They can give it to Scott. They can give it to Jeff. We will take their money.
If you were in the business of throwing away money by, say, backing Kickstarters for guys who have enough connections to maybe get their game published normally, hey, there's a donate button. Actually, there isn't. I'm going to update the site to have the donate button again.
Scott, get on that. People are throwing away money and we're missing it.
No!
But this is it, folks. Like, I dig. You know what? If you're a fan of Mega Man, by all means, support it. Like, again, I considered going on it because I'm a fan of Mega Man. If you're a Mega Man fan with a persecution complex, sitting there going, Capcom hates me? No. The market left you behind, folks. You're a fan of a game that is predominantly 2D side-scrolling. That really doesn't exist much anymore. Microtransactions are the way of the future now. Big, anything that you can cobble into an eSport or put it on a yearly release and get a whole bunch of multiplayers on there for maps and crap. That's modern gaming. And Capcom looked at it and went, we can't spin Mega Man into that, so we're going to kill it. KG decided, hey, no, you know what? There's enough of a fan base for this. I'm going to pump it out. But I'm not going to deal with producers on this. I'm not going to risk my own. Well, he says they've got more than enough money, so I'm assuming he's probably put his own capital in. But I look at it and go, why would you crowdfund this? If you actually believe your fan base is that strong, you can pump this thing out and they'll buy it. And they will. You can give them options. Like, that's all fine, well, and good. If that's what he was going for, great. But don't suddenly pump out another crowdfunding program that goes, oh, well, you know, we need another 100 grand for fully English voice acting. Like, who the hell are you hiring? You want to hire me? I'll do it for a hell of a lot less than that. I'm perfectly fine with that. Scott will do it for cheap, too. So, Jeff, they can get the three of us on the show for, like, 10 grand, period. But
we're cheaper than that.
We're cheaper than that, but we'd also have to throw in sandwiches, because, yeah.
Okay. Well, we kind of need to eat. Yeah. Let's be honest. But this is it. Like, I look at this, and I'm wondering exactly how far he can go with this. I'll admit I'm being cynical. I will completely own up to that. And maybe he's being completely just about this. Maybe this is perfectly fair, and he's like, no, you know what? This is my opportunity to interact with the fans who, a lot of whom don't know anything about video game development and therefore are going to just shoehorn in terrible ideas. But maybe he thinks this is going to be for the best and he's really going to generate a property that is great here. I just look at it and go, how much money are you going to milk out of your fan base without actually making anything? And that's me.
And here's the theory, and here's the thing. This is a formula that you can fart out pretty frequently.
Well, like it does okay.
Well, I'm just saying.
Well, we're going to crowdfund the sequel.
Yeah, like if you make Mighty Number 9, you break even, you now have an engine and a lot of art assets that you can turn around and make Mighty Number 9 2, The Revengeancing, on about half the budget.
Yeah, and how much of the... you can probably just flat reuse textures, reuse voice work, reuse music, probably just do a basic remix. Like, you can really cut down on the development costs of the sequel. And yet I can still see the sequel getting crowdfunded again. And sure, I mean, for the whole Kickstarter goal thing, bonuses, you know, t-shirts, you get to make your own character, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's cool. That's great. You know what? If you want to release that in a preamble and it's like, hey, guess what? You want to buy the game. Flat out, cool. This is not going towards development of the game or anything. It's just you're going to drop your $30 for the base game because seriously, I would not pay more than $30 for this. I'm going to drop $30 for this, but you want the t-shirt? Well, the t-shirt's an extra $10. Boom. You want your face in the game? That's, we got to mocap you, do shit like that. That's another $500, we'll say. Boom. Your voice is in it. $10,000. Dang. Done. It's a great buyer option. It's basically microtransactions before the game even fucking comes out. And yet people bitch at EA and Capcom for doing the same thing after the game comes out.
Well, the best example I think I can think of this is the Oculus Rift. This was crowdfunded. This was one of the biggest crowdfunding of all times. And when this finally came out and this, everyone realized, wow, this is going to be big. Facebook bought the damn thing for what, $2 billion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And guess what? If you crowdfunded that, guess what you get?
Your dev kit that you paid for. No, this is
not... You get what you paid for.
You get exactly what you paid for.
Yeah. But
however, you're not a producer or early investor, so you don't get any actual turnaround when that thing starts generating capital.
Right. It's like if you invested in that company beforehand and just gave them money and you own, you know, even 0.5% of that company.
Oh, fuck.
But they didn't.
You'd be, now, maybe not rich beyond your wildest dreams, but you would definitely make some good cash.
But they didn't sell shares. They sold Oculus Rift dev kits and t-shirts and thank you emails and Skype calls. They never put stock on the line. And anyone who's asking for it now is goddamn retarded.
Well, it's, they're retarded, but they it's one of those things they got to realize. You're not, you know, crowdfunding is not stock.
But that's the fun part.
You are giving them money and you are getting something in return, maybe. Or if you invest in a company, you are getting something back. Now, the question is, will it be good or bad? But you're getting something back.
That is what risky investments are. Like, that's normally, if you invest, there is always a little bit of venture capital to go along with it. If you're a venture capitalist, you're going to take that big risk and hope for the big return.
But I think
walks right around that and says, oh, no. We're going to take your money. We're going to give you a pittance for it. And we're going to use it however we want. You don't get a say. You're not on a board of directors. You're nobody.
Which is why I don't think there'll ever be a big, huge monster project like Oculus Rift ever crowdfunded again.
Probably not.
Because well, from this point forward, we're going to realize, no, if this turns out to be a huge, massive success, we ain't going to get shit.
Well, I think we've already seen it beat. Because Reading Rainbow made $5 million. And you know what people are going to get from that? Reading
Nothing.
Rainbow. You get to watch Reading Rainbow again.
But Reading Rainbow, I think, is a little bit more, I don't know, charitable. When you put into Reading Rainbow, do you really expect Reading Rainbow to make any money? Honestly.
Yes.
Maybe a
the
little.
The amount of money that just got dumped into that, any marketing exec, any advertiser anywhere who somehow missed that Kickstarter project loses their job. And all the rest who kept it get to sit there and go, holy fuck, will you look at the number of people who are willing to support this project? How can we get their money?
Right.
Because that's the job, right?
Yeah,
so if you invested in that, like if you were actually a producer for that show, like if LeVar Burton came up to you as a producer and said, look, I want to do Reading Rainbow again, and I can prove to you that I have a target audience of, you know, let's say 250,000 people globally. And you look at that and go, you know what? I think your numbers are off. I think we can actually do better than that. I will support you. And Reading Rainbow suddenly starts racking in ad dollars. You as the producer get to sit there and write blank checks.
Right.
If you kickstarted Reading Rainbow, you
get jackpot.
Watch Reading Rainbow. And I'm okay with that.
Well, that is what LeVar Burton promised me.
Yeah.
But I didn't kickstart it, and I still get to watch it. For a paltry investment of $0, I get the same thing that you got.
But I think the expectations going into something like Oculus Rift as opposed to Reading Rainbow were completely different.
Oh, yeah.
In Reading Rainbow, when you put in money, you did for Reading Rainbow, because A, you like the series, B, you want more of the series.
Yeah.
For Oculus Rift, A, you want to support this technology and you want to help it grow. And then when it grows beyond your wildest dreams, like, hey.
Shit. It passed me. Well, I mean, how many, like, I've kickstarted a few White Wolf projects. And every one of them, I base it on, would I pay that value for that book?
Right.
And that's my mitigating factor every time. I'm like, I would pay $60 for Mummy. So I paid $60 for Mummy. I paid for the final project. I pre-ordered, basically. But that's it.
Yeah. It's kickstarting is a purchase of something. That's all it is.
Exactly.
It's like that's if someone went out and said, hey, we're going to make more Firefly. We're going to kickstart it. All you're going to get is a dozen episodes of Firefly. But we need, you know, so much money. I think it would actually work. Now, I don't think it'll ever happen. But that's pretty much obvious. Like, hey, give us money. We'll make this show that you have been asking for. And that's what they're going to get. Whereas Oculus Rift was, help us, you know, build this technology to a grand new empire, which they did. And they sold it to Mark Zuckerberg for a shit ton of money, and you don't get any of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, crowdfunding, kind of a screw job.
Yeah.
Scott, what do you got?
Jeez, this is going to be hard for me to be upbeat on.
Sorry.
But don't worry, I got a really, well, I guess not an upbeat one, but I got a really funny one, so you go ahead and go.
the pain train is just rolling out of the gates. What the hell?
Chugga, 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 pain train.
I think I can.
I'm going to have to release the video of these one of these days. One of these days we will release the video of this. But yeah, I'm actually giving it to Knights of Cydonia, Netflix's first crazy attempt at simul-dubbing anime on their own without just buying the rights off of, you know, Viz for a change. And you know, I've enjoyed what I've read of the manga. And I watched the first episode the other day, and it was damn skippy.
See, the first time I saw the title for the show, it reminded me of the Muse song that I've been using to teach myself how to play guitar.
I think
so.
That...
It's like, you, I need to watch.
Well, and this is it. Is another friend of mine, Rachel. I was talking about Knights of Cydonia on Facebook because I just finished reading the first volume of the manga, and it's like, wait, what does this have to do with the Muse song? I don't know. It's a Japanese comic book, and then she concluded that the song must be some sort of fan work, and I listened to it, and I'm like, well, this doesn't seem to be about giant robots. It mostly seems to be about desperation.
Have you seen the video?
Well, the video is
cowboys with ray guns.
Well, the video is always going to be very different.
But, I mean, it's like, no, none of this is actually connected. It's just a really interesting, possibly coincidence. Though the video is awesome for using a CD to deflect a ray blast.
Well, what else are you going to use CDs for?
Chopping people's heads off.
Okay, good point. All right, Jeff, what you got?
Okay. Now, the last time I was on this show, we talked about Gundam. And little known fact, the very next morning I woke up with a kidney stone. I've had them before. It's just a bit of a genetic legacy on my father's side of the family. All my uncles have had them. All my male cousins have had them. My dad's had them. I've had them before. You just deal with them. But this one was particularly terrible. I have some painkillers I keep here. They give me some just in case this ever happens. I take the painkillers. Nothing happens. I don't even feel a little bit better. It's like, okay, let's give it a couple hours, see if anything gets better. A couple hours later, I'm literally writhing on the floor in agony. The best way that I can describe a kidney stone is to anyone who's never had one. Imagine someone is pinching you in a very sensitive spot, just to the point where your body reflexively moves away. Now imagine that for about 6 hours. So, you know, in the moment, it's not that terrible, but after about 6 hours, you're begging for God, the devil, Buddha, anyone who will listen, please come help.
Or kill me.
One or the other, yes. Anyway, here's the reason I'm telling this story. They take me to the hospital. They do an x-ray on me. It's like, okay, you have a very large kidney stone. You're not passing it ever. So we're going to have to do a little bit of surgery on you, but we can't do it now. We'll do it in the morning. So they take me to a hospital. They take me to a hospital room. They check me in, and they give me some really good painkillers. I mean the good stuff. I mean the real good stuff. And knocks me cold. I don't remember much anything, but I do remember waking up and having a very strange dream. And I wrote this dream down just for this show. So here's what happens. I get home, and according to my dream, I come home from the hospital to find my house has been moved. My house is no longer where it is. There is a nightclub in the place of the house. I then walk up to said nightclub, ask the bouncer, where is my house? He says, Barack Obama has moved it. It's not Barack Obama who tells me this. It is the bouncer.
He just happens to know Obama.
I don't know. Barack Obama moved my house. I asked him why, and he said he had to do it. Apparently, that's all my drug-addled brain needed to know. He gives me the address of where my house is now. I drive there. My house is in perfect condition. It's just someplace else. Okay, fine. I walk into my house, and as I walk in, I drop my cell phone for some reason, and it falls apart like Legos. Little bitty pieces of cell phone all over the place, and I literally stick them back together like Legos. I then walk up to my father who's sitting in the kitchen, and I go, why Barack Obama move our house? And he says, he had to. That's when I wake up. So yeah, those painkillers were pretty good. And then I had the surgery, the next day. I had a couple more days of agony, but then all is well. So yeah, painkiller dream. That's my pick of the week.
There we go.
Yeah. Barack Obama moved my house and replaced it with a nightclub.
Obama
I don't know why.
Has his reasons, but I'm sure they were a compromise for a much more radical position he had a year prior.
Yeah. The only reason I can think I was thinking about that is because I knew that staying in that hospital was going to cost me a shit ton of money thanks to my insurance, which it did. And maybe that's the only reason I can think Barack Obama moved my house and replaced it with a nightclub.
See, he sold your house because it's a good spot for a nightclub to fund other people's insurance.
I don't know. I just know those were really good painkillers.
I've heard worse healthcare plans.
I'm just saying.
I know that is... I think that's specifically where a lot of the cigarette tax goes in Ontario.
Well, see, I knew when I got there because I got to the hospital and they gave me some really weak painkillers that didn't do anything because I think they thought I was faking it. trying to get more drugs or something, or I don't know. But anyway, they took me through the x-ray, and as soon as I got out of the x-ray, the doc came in and said, okay, we didn't know what the problem now. That's a very huge kidney stone. You're not passing it. We're going to up your dosage. Then they gave me some really good stuff. I don't remember damn near anything after that. I just remember everything was really fuzzy. And I felt fine. I couldn't feel the bed I was laying on, but other than that, I'm okay.
So you were just floating.
Yeah.
Magical floating happy pills.
And they set me in a room and gave me a remote, and I watched, like, Pawn Stars for 8 hours.
Are you sure that wasn't torture?
I don't remember a lot of it. I'm just saying.
Because, I mean, I've heard of them using Enter Sandman to torture people in, you know, the Middle East. It kind of sounds like it. If they wanted to torture me, that's definitely one way to do it.
Hey, Pawn if you run enough drugs, you'd think that show was awesome.
No. No. That's not possible. That's not true. That's impossible.
Yeah. So, yeah, drug-addled dream. That's my pick of the week. What are we talking about today?
So tonight, today...
Drugs.
Tonight... Oh, that? Okay.
Today we are talking about the robots again.
Robots?
The goddamn robots.
We love robots.
But yes, in this case, we are talking about how Americans do the robot shows.
Fuck yeah.
Because fuck yeah.
Wait a minute. Wait. This is another question I had. Why, is if we're talking about American robots, why am I the only American here?
Well,
because at the end of the day, Americans cannot objectively observe themselves. You do require a minimum of 2 Canadians per American to get a genuine observation of your country.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll buy that. I will buy that. As long as the inverse also applies. To observe Canada, you got to get at least 2 Americans.
No, we need 2 British people.
Oh, okay.
That's how it works.
But an American, a British, and a Pakistani guy. I'm not
we'll
sure why
be
we need
able
a Pakistani
to properly
guy, but
observe downtown Toronto.
Okay.
Yeah.
Once you start to get into non, you know, UK derived races, you just start getting into sub spectrum city locations in Canada.
Okay. We got to get a Frenchman just to see, you know, when a Canadian starts to speak French and how pissed off the French guy gets.
Depends. Are we talking Parisian French or Quebecois?
I have no idea what either one of those are.
That's proof that you're an American and not a Canadian at all because Scott knows the difference.
Yeah.
So do I.
It is.
God bless America. Where I only have to speak one damn language.
Spanish?
Yep.
No, crap English.
Spanish.
Actually, I do know a little bit of Spanish just because we kind of have to.
See?
See?
Same amount of French I know.
Okay, then.
Enough to read the cereal box, right?
Yep. Enough to be able to swear at Quebec when I'm leaving.
All right. But yes, giant robots, as they are produced by Americans... Because it's kind of an interesting thing, because so little of it, I mean, I can name 3 things that are purely of U.S. origin, and the rest is sort of a deliberate shout-out to anime.
Or Americans taking anime and repurposing it as an American cartoon.
Well, there's that. But no, I mean, outside of, say, Starship Troopers and the 2 Robot Jocks movies...
Oh, God.
People, you would say 2, wouldn't you?
There were 2. There were
2. There was 1, and then there was some other thing.
2.
1.
The second one doesn't count as anything we want to remember.
Oh, come on. You barely want to remember Robot Jocks.
But we,
remember,
we can stand
in the context of the 80s.
Robot Jocks is like G-Savior. We just acknowledge it's there, and we just, okay. And then beyond that.
Don't pull in G-Savior. That suddenly pulls Canada into this mess, and we are not doing that tonight.
No. We are.
Oh, God.
Ah, crap.
Because there was at least 1 American actor in that damned catastrophe. I'm sorry. I am. But it was mostly Canada's fault.
It better be.
It was mostly your guys' fault. Half
in
that cast.
In our defense, we didn't make movies until your country decided to start making movies in ours. And anybody that says otherwise is a liar.
Yeah, don't.
Yes, but then you started making movies.
Hey.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Hey.
We're sorry.
We're sorry about that. Hey.
And we're starting the stereotype. Anyway.
Hey, we're allowed to. We're Canadian.
Shut up, you host head.
If you're going to do this, I'm going to start talking in a Missouri redneck accent. I'm just saying.
Go to it, you hoser.
You mean you aren't already?
Yeah.
Kind of, but I can, you know, turn it up a little bit.
All right, before this gets really pseudo-racist, let's...
No, we're already there.
We're there, man. We brought in the French.
That's true. That's true.
Actually, speaking of racism, we're still running our contest for one more week in which...
Speaking of racism?
Well, no,
it's
you...
It's G-Gundam.
Well, you have to... There are 105 nations not represented in the ranks of G-Gundam or its spin-offs and adaptations. So we need to fill out that roster. So tell us what you think a Gundam from a Gundam fighter from one of those 105 nations would be like. You don't have to draw anything. Just give us an outline.
You don't have to draw anything, write anything. You can do smoke signals. Like, it's cool.
Hey, I still want to see the Antarctica Gundam. I do. It's just a block of ice with a Gundam head on it.
I would actually picture that as, you know, three huskies kind of melted together in a horrible tentacle monster. But that's John Carpenter.
Yeah.
Right there is what that is. The Thing is a good movie.
I love The Thing. All right, so the giant robots in America, and it's a weird thing where, you know, even, like, the best ones are always sort of wearing their anime fandom very openly. Like, I mean, a lot of American cartoon geeks will be like, yeah, Exo Squad was the coolest thing ever, it's just no one watched it. And I'm like, well, yeah, the world wasn't ready for Gundam yet.
Yeah.
Or
can I bring up my all-time favorite American mecha creation, Megas XLR?
Well, yeah. That,
which
yeah.
Let's be honest, it's a friggin' love letter to that Gundam, Magazer, I can't even say the name all of a sudden.
Mazinger?
Yes, that.
There you go.
Evangelion, all sorts of, you know, any mecha anime you've ever seen, it's a love letter to it.
They have Bruce Campbell
in
a chainsaw-handed, shotgun-wielding Elvis robot. The entire show is a love letter to geekdom as a whole, with robots as a theme drive.
And this is true.
Megas XLR is just amazing, though.
Yes.
Like, it...
I'm still insulted beyond all reason I do not have this on DVD.
Why will no one release this for me? Why will no one do this?
Same reason for
I
this.
Can't get Downtown, because Goat was in both. As best I can tell, if you put Goat in a show, you're not allowed to actually have, you know, that show get released. He shook his fist angrily.
Oh, apparently we can buy digital copies of it now.
Ooh.
That's an option. iTunes and the Xbox Live Marketplace.
I'll have to look on Google Plus, see if it's there.
But yeah, no, I mean, Megas XLR, it was just fun.
Yeah.
And come on, you gotta love that theme song.
Oh, if you haven't sung the theme song, you're lying.
Well,
you sang along at least once,
like
minimum once.
You had to.
Chicks dig giant robots.
Well, yeah. And this is it. It's like, as much as, you know what, we're all kind of a little bit sick of shouting at the AN Gundam panels. You know, because it just get on our nerves at some point. But when I sit down at the front of the room at the table and say, hey, I dig giant robots, you dig giant robots, chicks dig giant robots, okay, everyone tunes in.
Yeah. And let's be honest, this is one of the first shows I've ever seen that takes place in New Jersey, and you love.
Yeah, it's hard. Well, I like The Sopranos.
That should show you how good a show it is.
Yeah.
Jersey, and it's good.
Yeah. It takes place in New Jersey, and it's awesome. That shouldn't be possible, yet it is.
Yeah. And it really is. It's a blast of a show to watch. It was... Apparently there was rumors of both a revival and a video game. Though, I'm not sure how well Megas would do as a game.
Well, you would just...
I don't know. If it's almost a parody of a game, you know, it's kind of like... If they did it like the Simpsons game, where it was just parodying other games to a point.
I mean, you could
it
definitely...
It could kind of work. As long as it parodies,
sort of...
you know...
It's got to do it carefully, because both Deadpool and Duke tried to do that, and both of them fell right on their face.
Yeah.
I'll defend Deadpool a little bit, just because it was a fun little movie that happened to be a game. But yeah, Duke was a train wreck.
Yeah. So, I mean, with Megas, get the right team behind it, and I think it'd be great. You've got to get a bunch of people who really want to make a fun game. Just straight
the only way I could see them doing it, if they did it seriously, is just making a big-ass Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
I would play that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like... The old King of the Monsters game, just make us XLR people shoot at other robots.
I was actually just thinking that. That would be a blast.
Megas XLR versus G-Savior. I would have fun for days.
Megas
beating
is
the hell
win.
Out of G-Savior.
But Megas is going to win, because he's got the button that's the I win button.
Yeah. That'd be half the fun.
Yeah. See how long you can go without hitting that button?
G-Savior showed up in Build Fighters for, 3 seconds? And he got blown up. It's the G-Savior! Boom! Never mind.
Never mind.
Well, it's the G-Saver. He's gone now.
Oh, yeah, Megas? Magus was a blast. Magus was, as much as it was a love letter to a bunch of shit, it was still its own show. Like, it showed that there are definitely guys over here who can make some really fun shit without just aping Japan directly.
Can I point out, this is little known fact, my all-time favorite robot, and he's not a giant robot, but he is one of the characters that first got me interested in robot characters in general. His name is R2-D2. Perhaps the best Star Wars character. I don't care what Scott says, he is the best Star Wars character.
Now, him and Chewie are running the whole rebellion from behind the scenes.
I'm just saying, R2 isn't there. Everyone dies in episode 3. Hell, episode 1, 2, 3, everybody.
Yeah.
Without R2, they're all dead.
And I mean, R2, ignoring... You
know, I gave a damn about that
4, 5, and 6, Luke never really meets Ben.
Yeah.
Straight up, like, if R2 got destroyed, if R2 and 3PO got taken out on the Tainted Four, Luke might meet Ben as, you know, the old wizard, but that's going to be about it.
Actually, no, I'll take that back further. Episode 1, R2 doesn't save that damn Naboo starship. Guess what? They don't make it off the damn planet. Yeah. Luke never gets born. He doesn't have a mother. Darth Vader never gets off the goddamn sand planet. He remains a slave forever.
Well, maybe not forever.
Okay, for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Just saying, R2. But I gave a damn about that little trash can.
Well, he is a trash fucking can, obviously.
But I felt emotion for that midget in a trash can, which is basically what it was.
And he looks dapper in a hat.
He does.
Doesn't he, Scott?
He does look dapper in a hat.
Yes.
Since you folks aren't able to see it, Scott has an R2 unit in his room with a hat on it.
He's full of beer. Beer.
The greatest R2 ever.
Yeah. Instead of shooting a lightsaber out, he just shoots a beer out.
Beer.
I will really take either.
Maybe not one after the other. That could be trouble.
That's true. I'm not a Jedi.
Especially if you don't know which one's coming.
Yeah.
Beer me. Oops.
Shit. I needed those fingers. I needed those fingers for holding beer.
But what other American mechs can we think of?
Well, there's, of course, the classic Starship Troopers. The book, not the movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
The movie is at least laughable.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. The actual fact that it was a Starship Troopers adaptation was sort of a late-to-the-game thing. If you just sort of sit back and look at it as, oh, Paul Verhoeven's doing another sci-fi satire, it's all right.
Yeah.
But then it's like, oh, it's supposed to be Starship Troopers now, and that doesn't work so well anymore. No, I mean...
It's really not. It's silly and dumb and really over the top, but it doesn't really touch on much. Like, other than the citizenship reference, which you can easily miss if you're watching it on TV.
Well, let's be honest. Starship Troopers can be subtitled Starship Troopers, Explosion, Guts, Gore, and Boobs.
Yep. That's basically,
the movie. Big explosions, goriness all over the place, and boobs.
Yep. So, like any good B-movie, that's really all there is to it.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the plot is...
Robots?
On the grand scale of, you know, if there was an important list in Starship Troopers, plot would be at least 5 or 6.
I think that's high, unless it's only the top 5 things. The only 5 things in Starship Troopers.
If they have a top 10 list, most important things we need to do in this movie, plot is at least 6. Let's just say that.
At most 6.
Maybe I'm giving you a little too much credit.
You are.
Okay. Yeah.
The cast clearly was of a greater priority than the plot.
Yeah, well.
Well, Freddie Prinze Jr., I mean, that kid was going somewhere.
He's going somewhere.
Hey, I remember when that movie came out, they said Casper Van Dien was going to be the next action hero.
He is. He's in a lot of B-movies. He has a massive career of films that nobody has seen. And all of them are actually legally allowed to be watched.
No. My dad is a huge, huge Tarzan fan. And when that movie with him came out, we went and saw it. And it was terrible. And when we left the theater, he's like, oh, God, why did I pay money for that?
Hey, Casper Van Dien is going to be in, I kid you not, Sharktopus versus Mermantula.
Die in a fire asylum. Die in a fire.
Actually, speaking of asylum and dying in a fire,
no!
Transmorphers? Which is not a Transformers knockoff at all, but in fact, Mostly just a ripoff of Terminator, except
sort of,
kind of.
And the ripoff is so bad you can't even tell what they're trying to rip off.
Oh yeah, like it is that bad.
Really? Huh.
Do we actually count the Big O as a Western mecha?
Second season.
We funded it
because basically, you know, it was okay in Japan, but nobody really gave a damn. But we here in the States gave a damn.
It was Batman with robots.
Basically, yes. Bruce Wayne, instead of putting on a Batman outfit, gets in a big-ass robot and blows shit up. And then has, you know, one of the weirdest endings in any series I've ever imagined. Although they were expecting a third season to kind of clear that up, and that didn't happen.
And that's why you play Super Robot Wars. Because when they threw Big O in there, they cleared that up after.
Well, that's what good. Super Robot Wars is for.
Yeah, basically.
Good. I never played it. Clear it up, please.
Fuck, you're going to make me dredge up the English translation right now.
You don't have to give it exactly. Just give me the short version.
It's basically, given the option of forgetting or not, you choose not to. That's it. You choose to live. You choose to learn from the life you had. You choose to move forward.
That's a lot less complicated than I expected.
Yeah. And then, you know, he helps Zeta Gundam take down Shiroko, and you're still stuck with Kiriyamato, who unto himself is his own entry in the black history. Like, the Zeta Gundam turn A Kira Yamato. Like,
bad shit happens, I know.
Yeah. But yeah, no. They try and fix it up in SRW because that is what SRW is for.
Oh, well.
No.
And I guess going to visit video games, I mean, I'll give Americans a bit more credit here because I think I played a way too many mech sims during the 90s.
They were a thing.
They were a thing.
Mech Warrior was one of those things everybody either played or heard of. I mean, that had a card game.
People, here's the thing. They did, like, this full simulation pod Mech Warrior game. People are keeping those pods running.
Yeah.
The pen and paper game was solid.
I remember there was a arcade near here that was since long since closed, but they had a Mech Warrior game hooked up in this giant orb almost, had six screens on it, had the huge control pad in the middle, and the entire cage it was in rotated. So, yep. When you move forward, when you moved your mech forward, the thing rolled forward a little bit. When you got hit, the whole thing shook. It cost a small fortune to play. It was like $20 to play it once. I played it once.
Well, you had but to do when it the, once.
Yeah.
But when the arcade went out of business, they came out and said, okay, we are selling off all our machines. And they literally just put price tags on them. Anyone who wants it, here's what we're offering. They're going to go down until they're gone. That thing was gone in the first week.
Yep.
I always wondered, did someone or some company buy that? I wonder. Or is that still in some guy's basement somewhere?
That's in someone's basement.
If you look up the wiki entries on those pods, you can find out what some people did with them. Like, a bunch of players actually in Japan bought 4 pods to use themselves. Like, it's fucking crazy, man. And at the same time, if I had that kind of disposable income at the time...
Oh, shit, if I was rich, like, done, mine.
That's not even a question.
That is my game room now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to build a room just for that thing. Because I'm now rich.
You can do that.
Mm.
Now, old school, one of my favorite American robots, Robbie the Robot.
Robbie.
Fucking loved that shit. Loved that shit. Because it was crazy, and it aged poorly. Like, you look at the robot with its two arms, and it's, I'm going to kill all humans, and I'm clearly just knocked out of the Tempest. But so much fun, so neat. I kind of miss those period-style robots.
Like the 50s robots?
Yeah, that were usually just a midget in a can.
Yeah. Well, and I got to love all the robot designs from Futurama for really bringing those back. And how they have all have antennas, because they look more science fiction-y.
Yep. Don't really need them. Most of the technology we have now does not have an exposed antenna, so probably wouldn't have that in 2,000 years, but, you know, why not?
But if you're going to make a robot, you got to make sure it runs on beer.
Yes.
Well, yes.
And then farts out carbon monoxide. How that exactly works, I'm not sure, but still.
Poor chemical breakdown?
Yeah, probably.
Fusion reactor inside, maybe?
So hey,
good news, everyone. Anyway.
So apparently there is a robot hall of fame maintained by the computer science school at Carnegie Mellon.
Bender better be in there, I'm just saying.
Well, here's the thing I'm not getting. The first four robots they introduced were R2-D2.
Yes.
Sojourner, the Mars exploration robot.
Okay.
Unimate, the first assembly line robot for GM. And HAL 9000.
Why are we putting HAL in there?
That is...
Hey.
Yeah.
As far as destroy all humans robots go, you do not get better than HAL 9000. That is the top of the line, destroy all humans robot.
What
and
about
if you look
Gort?
Over the other entries, none of them are really destroy all humans.
Well, there's Gort.
Scott.
Yeah.
Don't ever mention that again.
What's wrong Gort? With
you? You just compared Gort to HAL 9000.
Yeah, from the day the Earth stood still.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Gort is really just a machine. Gort is not...
Gort is useless.
Gort is not evil. HAL is evil. HAL has will. HAL has malice. HAL has understanding of its actions. Gort really is just Klaatu's kind of clunky Cyclopean bodyguard. He is what Cyclops would be in the comic books if Jean Grey just showed up and said, I'm going to kill the world. So he is Cyclops.
Yes.
Statement stop. Yeah.
The HAL 9000, yeah. Creepy, creepy computer program.
You gotta love it, though. Cause it's
especially since he is, you never see a robot, buddy. He's just a friggin' red light with a voice.
Yep. It's a
that makes him all the creepier.
Because
I'm
it's
sorry,
not
Dave.
Something. Yeah. It's a face on the screen, at best. Like, it's great for a haunted house vibe.
Well, it starts out, you know, creepy and just goes way downhill from there.
Yeah.
By the end, he's, you know, cutting off oxygen. So, well, I can't let you do that. Yeah. And the most effective way to not let you do that is to kill you.
Yeah, to provide you with the opportunity for death.
Let's see, what's the quickest way I can kill you? Don't have guns, don't have any kind of stabby weapons.
You're 70% liquid. Oh, and you've got a respirator. Oh, fuck. I would have removed that years ago. Okay, well, we'll just take advantage of that.
Cut off the oxygen, turn up the temperature, and see which one goes first. Oh.
Does
will
he cook
we cook
or
him,
pump?
Or will he stop breathing?
Nope.
I'll take bets. Who wants some? Bender walks in. Wait. $5 on the lungs going.
Fuck.
Did anyone else here play any of the Earth Siege games?
I've never even heard of them.
Nope.
The
name sounds familiar.
Okay, this was, again, back in the 90s when Sierra kind of mattered as a video game development house. And
you
they
mean
were...
other than a flying toaster?
Yeah, yeah. So Earth Siege was their like series of mech sims that were just kind of like literally Mech Warrior 2 clones.
Fuck.
And no, they did come up with their own setting, and you know, it was this whole thing like in the future, robots have conquered everything. So we fight the robots in big robots.
Okay, first off, apparently Earth Siege is derived from Metal Tech.
Yes.
Because apparently we didn't have copyright litigation in the 90s.
Nope. And somehow it spun off into tribes, and I don't know how that happened.
How the fuck does that work?
I don't know!
Like,
that was something I never got. Like, I played Earth Siege and Earth Siege 2, and I knew there was some sort of spinoff where it was a strategy game, and then someone was like, oh yeah, Tribes was a spinoff of that, and I'm like, how is Tribes a spinoff of my giant robot game?
I'm assuming somebody who worked on one worked on the other and said, yeah, no, it's totally the same game.
Yeah.
We got no giant robots, but otherwise, totally the same game. That's what my drugs tell me.
Yeah, something like that.
Have either of you seen the movie Moon with Kevin Spacey, Sam Rockwell?
I wanted to, because it's Sam Rockwell.
That is kind of like almost the anti-HAL 9000. Kevin Spacey plays a sentient computer program that assists Sam Rockwell as he's a miner or an archaeologist. I guess a miner is a better term. He's mining for some kind of fuel that is on the moon, and it gets shipped back to Earth. And Kevin Spacey is the computer program that assists him. That is kind of like the anti-HAL 9000. He really tries to help this guy, especially when things go to hell in a handbasket, which I will not spoil for anyone who has not seen the movie. It's really kind of disturbing when you watch the movie, but not in the way you're thinking.
I am going to need to see this. It's as simple as that. I've wanted to see it for a while.
It's on
just
Netflix.
More reason to see it.
It's on Netflix. It's a really, really simple movie. I mean, the whole thing takes place in basically one room. I mean, it almost feels like an indie movie, except it's got big stars in it.
Well, it was an indie movie. I think the budget was, you know, okay, $5 million is a lot of money, but it's also
well,
not
they,
a
they
lot
had
of
one
money.
Set. The whole movie takes place in this one room. It's a really good room. It's got a really some really cool stuff in this room, but it takes place in one room.
Okay. So,
and there's like one set on a green screen where he's walking around, you know, hopping around the moon.
Well, another one that was actually this one actually is actually Canadian is Heavy Gear, which most people remember as a really shitty cartoon.
Say the name again.
Heavy Gear.
I remember RPG for that.
Yeah. See, that's
I don't remember cartoon.
Yeah. No. There was a like again the shitty cartoon came out in probably around 2000. And this was also, this was a little bit after it had a couple of PC games, but it was mostly the RPG, and that was kind of, it was riffing, the creators will say they were riffing on Votomes, but there's some, like, Mos Peta in there, too. And I think it never got the fairest shake as a setting, just because the cartoon was shitty.
Well, we had a preponderance of these in the 90s. Like, everything kind of looked very much like it was spun out of Battletech.
Yeah.
And that kind of hurt it in the American market. I mean, like, when you to transpose it against the Japanese market, you've got Gundam, you've got Mazinger, you've got Getter, you've got Raiden, you've got J9. Like, the robots, even when they were similar, were distinctive enough that they stood apart. But I mean, like, if you put Heavy Gear on the shelf next to Battletech and asked an uninformed individual if they're the same system, they're not going to tell them apart.
Hell, like you can't.
If you showed them the cartoons, they'd probably just assume it was different seasons.
Yeah. Oh, and if you're looking at the minis, I mean, God, they're identical.
Well, the minis, seriously, you could swap. Like, just straight up paint the bloody thing and swap it. I think I look at the minis and it kind of feels like they were trying to actually compete with GW, which is about the dumbest thing you can do when you don't have their budget. But it's like we had that saturation there, because I remember, like, when Palladium was a thing you played. Like,
as opposed
when
to
people
the thing
went
you laugh
and
at.
Bought Rift books.
Actually, someone on the MHQ Facebook was like, how do I convert Rifts for sort of a homebrew Gundam game? And my first response was, well...
Metcon Zeta.
Well, no, my first response was, phase one, burn every copy of Rifts you own.
Yeah. And then get Mechton.
And then go buy Mechton, because hey.
Yeah, because Mechton's fantastic. Mechton is everything you want in a giant robot role-playing game. But when we all would sit down and play those freaking Palladium games, they were god-awful. Like, you would get people who even knew what they were playing and were still sitting there going, well, I could do this in Battletech. I could do this here. I could do that there. Like, Heavy Gear, let's... And it's like, they're not interchangeable, and at the same time, they all blurred together. Like, they all tried to be each other. One had a card game, so the other had a card game. One had a crappy PC game, so the other, for some reason, shot lower. Like, substandard cartoon? Well, you know what? We're going to get something
we can
that
be
can't
even worse.
Captain Crunch as an advertiser.
Like, you know what? Like, I swear to God, someone at DreamPod 9 saw the god-awful Battletech cartoon and said, we can do worse.
Yeah. You think you're shitty. Maybe see what we got.
I got something for you. I'm almost ashamed to admit that I loved this when I was a kid, but I did. I really did. Captain Power.
Oh, God.
I loved this show when I was a kid, and it was so dumb.
So
it was
bad.
So bad.
Man.
Looking back on it now, I've watched... You know, so let's go rewatch Captain Power. I watched an episode on YouTube, and oh, my God.
No. I had a customer this week by Fern Gully. And the only way I could describe it was 90s environmentalism. That's the only way I could describe it, because that's what Captain Planet and Fern Gully and everything else sold us. If you recycle, the world is fine, and pollution is this horrible, toxic, living monstrosity that will actually kill you personally.
And it employs no people and produces no goods other than pollution.
It is this self-fulfilling monstrosity. It is a cancer on the world. And it's like, oh, but five kids can summon, you know, a green mullet weirdo who dies in front of Hitler because hatred is a pollution.
Oh, God. That was the hippiest thing about it, was that hatred was also pollution.
I think you may have misheard me. I didn't say Captain Planet. I said Captain Power.
Shit, I did.
Yeah.
Now, okay. Captain Planet is a whole other problem because that has nothing to do with Mecha. But still, yeah. Captain Power had something to do with Mecha. in a horrible, horrible way.
I have no idea why I heard Captain Planet. Anyway, you're a terrible person, and I'm going to fucking stab you for fisting Captain Power.
I'm sorry. Captain, go back and watch one of those episodes.
I have. I used to watch it at night, man. Space would run it. It was great. Yeah. It was a wonderful show. Actually,
I sat in front of my TV. Yeah. I had the little, you know, spaceship gun thing.
Yeah.
And I shot, like, you know, at the bad guys. My action figure always got ejected all the time.
Yep.
I still own in my possession, it's around here somewhere, a VHS copy of the cartoon they made. So you can actually, you know, play along with it. If I still had a VCR, I could actually do it, but I don't.
But because I have to defend Captain Powell. I have to. It's who I am. It was also a fairly serious show for a children's program. I mean, can you show me another children's program where a character friggin' dies straight up?
Yeah.
Exo Squad?
Voltron.
Yeah. But that's it. They play it hard.
Yeah.
Dredd is not played off as a semi-sympathetic villain. You get the backstory episode where you find out that before the world went to hell, he was less of an asshole. And then he digitizes the last woman he loves. And it's like, great job, Dr. Doom. No, Captain Power, yes. Captain Power was kind of a crappy mecha show.
Yeah.
But it still holds a special place in my heart, and it shouldn't. Because it was horrible marriage of Terminator, Star Wars, and a B-grade action movie.
And
it was a TV show.
That existed to sell one toy that only worked with the TV show.
You know,
and we all had it.
Of course we did. Well, I didn't. A buddy of mine did, because I was too poor to own that. Uh-huh. So I would go over to Richard's house, and we would watch it, and I would pee-pee.
You'd argue over who gets to shoot the thing at the TV and then die.
I would basically get him in trouble with his parents so that I could pee-pee. That was that kid. And then we would go play Punch-Out, and then we would lose to Mike Tyson, because that's how you played Punch-Out.
Nostalgia.
Yep.
That's right, I brought Captain Power up into this.
Oh, God.
So you want to go one step worse?
We already talked about
this
Captain
whole
Planet.
Episode is all about one step worse. Then, Robot Wars, come on.
Let's go GoBots.
Oh, God.
Let's go GoBots.
Shut up. I'm leaving now. Goodbye. You know what? I'm putting down my mic.
Bye, Jeff. Bye. No. Bye, Jeff.
No.
And the tragedy is GoBots was licensed. It is based on Machine Robo Kronos.
You know I'm back. No.
Did you go get me a coffee? Is he dead?
He died.
Shit. No. But no, like, no. Machine Robo Kronos was actually good. GoBots? GoBots was clearly, we need something to compete with Transformers. So we'll make the good guys the bad guys. We'll chop together the plot and edit out the humans.
I bring Captain Power to the table. You bring GoBots?
Yes.
Well, okay, here's the stupid... See, GoBots is just this thing where you think they hit bottom on stupid. And then you find out that, Hasbro bought out Tonka. Which means they own all the character names and all the story content for GoBots, but they can't actually make the toys. Bandai can still make GoBots as much as they want.
But they can have no plots.
They can have no story, and I think they have to ask nicely to use the actual names of the characters on the packaging.
No.
Yes.
Yep.
No.
In Japan, Bandai opted to keep the Machine Robo line rather than importing the GoBots due to licensing issues.
No.
We live in an awesome world.
This world is insane.
Yes, it is. Yes.
You know what? I will watch G-Savior 3 times in a row before I have to ever have to deal with GoBots again. I'm just saying.
You should watch Machine Robo Kronos, Jeff. It's better than you remember. It has humans. And it has a guy named Ram Stahl. And you don't need to know his name. But he shows up to the strings of a Spanish guitar. Okay. It is fucking awesome.
Okay.
And the worst part is everything I said is real. It's not my usual Jim makes shit up crap.
Okay, there's only one place we can go from here. Bayformers.
I was expecting that. That's why I went to GoBots first.
See, okay, and for the record...
Now look, I will say this. Transformers 1 was a good movie. It
90
was
minutes
fun.
To see Optimus Prime on screen? No, it wasn't.
No. And then, after that 90
fun.
Minutes, there was 20 minutes of Optimus Prime just being a dick to shave the beef, which I could empathize with, except the movie insists that he's the main character, except when it keeps cutting to all of these side characters who have plots for some reason.
First off, thank you, Scott, for calling him Shave the Beef. I appreciate that. I very much do. Second off, can somebody explain to me how the fuck you can fly through space, deflecting space debris at ridiculous speeds, but a bullet can pierce your hide?
Well, they're
somebody,
high heat
anybody?
Rounds.
Really, really good at navigation.
You're going to hit something. There is some particle out there that is whipping around at just shy the speed of light, and that fucker's going to hit you. How does ice stop you? Like, in Iron Man, I can accept the icing issue. And shit, we never even touched on Iron Man. In Iron Man, I can accept the icing issue because, funny thing, he builds it on Earth. But how are you flying through fucking space, somehow able to dodge all your space debris, but you hit a fucking dirtball planet that's like two-thirds water, and oh shit, you're frozen.
Hey, I'm just saying. I was willing to turn off my brain for Transformers 1 and enjoy it.
See,
the problem was
that
Transformers
is never
2
a justification.
And Transformers 3 were the exact same movie. The exact same plot. The exact same things happened.
I will take your word for it, because so far I have seen Transformers 1 and was filled with rage. Absolutely glowing with ferocity by the time it was done. And other than that, I've seen 15 minutes of Dark of the Moon, called part of the plot, been flabbergasted that the Academy tried to give it a nod for editing, because that is the worst editing I've ever seen.
Well, and you sit there, and you watch it, and it's like, this scene goes. Like, this scene is on the floor. Like, nothing from this scene needs to be here. I don't need the Witwicky parents. I don't need the stupid dog. I don't need Stanley Tucci's character.
I like Stanley Tucci. Like,
but I'm willing to turn off my brain.
See, no, Jeff. No. That is never a justification. Turning off your brain is not a justification. And it's not even a good justification for other Michael Bay movies. You know why? Do you know why? Because The Island makes fucking sense.
Yep.
Bad Boys 2 makes fucking sense. You don't have to turn off your brain to enjoy those movies. They're not deep, but you don't have to actively discourage thought to appreciate what is going on.
You don't have to give up the capacity to perceive color to understand what you're dealing with. And somebody explain to me why the only, you know, stereotypically black Autobot in the first one is the only one to die.
Because that's a rule in movies. The black dude dies first, even if he's a robot.
Night of the Living Dead. Dawn of the Dead. Day of the Dead.
Zombie movies. They're already dead.
No.
Ben Some of the main characters are Peter already Davis. Dead in zombie movies. That doesn't
and
count.
And the guy whose name I cannot remember in Day, because I haven't watched Day in forever, lives. No. Black characters can live through movies.
Yeah,
so,
but in a zombie movie, half the characters are already dead, so that kind of moots the point.
There is one robot kill in the entire fucking film.
Yes, and the black dude dies first, even if he's a robot.
And no one gives a fuck.
Bullshit.
Here's the reason. I went and saw Transformers 1 in theaters, and I thought, okay, that was fun. Dumb, brainless fun, but fun. I went and saw Transformers 2, I was like, my God, that was terrible. And when Transformers 3 came out, they said, Transformers 2 was terrible because of the writer's strike, and we kind of had to flub it together. But don't worry, Transformers 3 is going to be a whole lot better. And me, being the dumbass that I am, I bought it. It's like, oh, what? Maybe they're right. I went and saw Transformers 3. It was the exact same damn movie again. No writer's strike. You actually had writers this time, and you still came up with the exact same damn movie. So no, I will not see Transformers 4, even with Dinobots. No.
They're only
no,
in
you
the
don't
last want to
see
hour.
It with Dinobots.
I don't care if Grimlock's in it. I don't care if there's a giant
That's
transforming
Grimlock.
T-Rex.
That's not Grimlock. That is something that calls itself Grimlock and looks like Grimlock, sort of. But that is not Grimlock.
And he's the wrong color. It's another thing. When I saw the toys in the Toys R Us and Walmarts and Targets and whatnot, and Kmarts and everything, it's like,
Tarmarts.
Grimlock's not orange.
Well,
he's not even
in
orange in the movie.
You know they've issued a line of the Dinobots from that movie in their classic colors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because nobody who is a fan of G1 is going to buy them otherwise.
Yeah.
As a fan of G1, still not going to fucking buy it because that's not fucking Grimlock. I do not look at that thing and see Cup tell your war stories again. You know my response to every one of these movies, every time they pump one out? I sit down, I listen to the soundtrack from 1986, and I go, there was a better time. There was a time when I had the touch. There was a time when I would dare to be stupid. Time can be mine again. And then I throw in 1986, and I watch it, and I kind of tear up a little bit when Prime dies, because I go back to being a three-year-old boy. But, you know.
Well, and the thing about
I just go play those Transformers, Fall of Cybertron video games. Those were fun.
I never played those.
Those were
they
fun.
They looked okay, but
those I could were nice, old-school, fun games.
Okay.
If you were a G1 fan, that's like they're both like prequels to everything that ever started in Transformers, and they're both a lot of fun.
Might have to dredge one up. Not going to dredge up the like Legend of the Dork Spark or whatever the fuck is out right now.
Yeah. The only complaint I have is, even in those, Megatron does not sound like a German. Whereas in the original G1, let's be honest, Megatron was a Nazi.
Oh yeah.
Well yeah.
But we can't make him a Nazi now. That's just not right.
Well, the whole thing was, about trying to find the same sort of clarity that was World War II in a post-Vietnam world.
You mean where the bad guy was really obviously the bad guy and the good guy was really obviously the good guy because the bad guy had taken it so far that everybody looked at him and went, you're fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, the good old days.
So Iron Man, because we need something fun in our lives.
And Vietnam was really depressing and we need some bad guys to hit on.
Yeah. We need an enemy that is clearly an enemy. So our enemy is going to swing, a purple glowing... What the fuck did Megatron use? That was the mace, yeah. A purple glowing mace.
Yeah.
And he's going to constantly be a jerk to everyone around him. And he's not going to kill Starscream because fuck only knows why.
I love Starscream. Even as a kid, I don't know why I loved him, but I did. Just because, you should be dead by now. You should be so dead.
Within all logical reasonings, yeah.
It's like... I don't know how you keep surviving. And then when he finally does die, he's a ghost for eternity.
Yeah, because his spark is indestructible.
Why would he be?
Hey, he survived everything else. I'm just saying, you can't kill Starscream. He even shows up in Beast Wars all those years later.
Yep. And actually, I wanted to go to that. Beast Wars. Beast Machines.
I like it more than G1. God damn it.
So good.
That's a little sacrilegious, I'll say that. Now, it was the best thing since, by far.
They had better plot.
They had that
on... plot was all over the place.
If you didn't cry when Dinobot died, you're lying.
You're a monster.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, like...
He died saving humanity, for God's sakes.
Yeah. They had complex plots like that. Like, Rhinox going fucking evil, and you assume it's just, okay, he's being mind-controlled and shit, and then he's like, no, I actually like this. And you're like, wait, what?
I give no fucks about any of you.
Yeah.
Megatron and that thing was... Oof, got it. I mean, you thought Nazi Megatron was bad. Megatron in Beast Wars was a narcissist beyond all reason.
Yes.
Megatron in Beast Wars 1.
Yeah. That and every time you see him...
One of the hardest parts in that is you really got to sit down and consider that Beast Wars doesn't pull a punch. They let the bad guy full on fucking win.
Yep.
Twice!
Yeah.
They had to fix it with time travel, man.
They had to pull a Marvel Comics. They had to pull an 80s X-Men to fix this issue.
Transformers, Days of the Future. What the fuck?
Yep. But that's great.
Beast Wars also Canadian, by the way.
This show aged very nicely. Like, you can go back and watch this, and other than a few of the side episodes and just some weird characters that show up for no fucking reason.
I don't even remember that. I don't even remember the episode. One of my all-time favorite episodes of that series... was that proto-transformer that comes down, and he's all powerful, and he's screwed up, and he can't transform. I can't remember the name of that episode. And Silverbolt and the big crab guy are trying to fight over him. Crap, I don't remember that episode. But I felt sorry for that freak of nature transformer when he died.
I can picture the episode you're talking about.
Yeah, I know the one.
Where at the end of the episode, the transformer's, he's holding his head, and he goes, I hurt. And then he goes offline. You're like, that poor bastard. I cried. I remember that episode because I cried and I had to go to school that day. I was like, I'm crying. I had to go to school. If I show up with tears in my eyes, people are going to think I'm a wuss.
Yeah, dredging it up, like through Wiki, there's a listing for Transmutate, who is this character.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
I think that was the name of the episode, too, now that I think about it.
Yeah, and Prime basically looks at him and goes, this doesn't need to exist.
Probably well, he's defective. Be. He can't even transform.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the point of being a Transformer if you can't transform?
Well, especially since that's a necessary survival on Earth at that point.
Right.
Like,
if you don't transform, you will die from intertime poisoning. So, for all intents and purposes, this thing is going to die. Maybe not right now, but eventually. But yeah, that Beast Wars, if you were never seen Transformers, you could enjoy it. But if you were an old school fan of G1, they brought up all sorts of little throwbacks. And then there was that
Finding the Ark and Prime unconscious.
And then all the Transformers are just laying there, and they're friggin' giants, because by this point all the Transformers are shrunk down.
Well, they're about human-sized, a little bit bigger at times.
Yeah, a little bit bigger, but, you know the original G1 Transformers are huge, and then Megatron kills, or at least blows the hell out of the original Optimus Prime's head.
Yep.
And they have to repair him while he's still unconscious so they don't fuck up the timeline. That was fun.
That was a damn fine show.
And of course, that was a season cliffhanger, so that ends with everything going to hell in a handbasket. Then you come back,
anybody
okay,
who
now
knew
we get
anything about G1 going, what the fuck?
And then they made a sequel series that we don't talk about so much.
Nope. They didn't make a sequel.
They made something without heart and soul.
Yeah.
Which we don't talk about, those things.
This whole episode.
Although we did just talk about GoBot, so we're already at the bottom of the pit.
Yeah, but we would do dishonor to the greatness of the original program.
I suppose. But we'll bring up GoBots.
Hey, GoBots matter.
In the same way that a nail getting driven through your shoe matters, yeah.
Yeah, you remember that, don't you? And you remember GoBots, don't you, Jim? When you're alone at night and the lights are off and the doors are firmly locked and the windows shut, you'll be there in the dark. You'll still remember GoBots.
I hate you,
GoBots
Jim.
GoBots are never going anywhere.
I hate you. Hate you all. Hate you all.
They can't leave
we
you.
We may have probably just induced some sort of PTSD flashback in listener, and if we did, you have my somewhat apology. I can't control that.
Flashback
so.
For the listener. Flashback for me, damn it.
No, you don't count. You're on the show, man.
Yeah. We don't apologize to you.
When I stormed out of here yelling no, I went into a corner and weeped for a couple minutes, okay?
So that's why you didn't bring me a coffee.
Yeah. No! I'm not bringing you anything.
But we
you
really
just
need
a
that
horrible,
coffee.
Horrible flashback.
We really need that coffee, Jack.
That's the worst part about that. I wasn't even thinking about GoBots. I was thinking today, I got to think about some, American cartoons to talk about. What am I going to talk about? I came up with all these ideas, and then GoBots. Fuck it all.
Boom.
Burn it
all
to the ground.
All the ideas.
Dead. All hopes and dreams are gone. And it's all your fault.
You're welcome.
No, I'm not.
There you are.
What else can we talk about that isn't GoBots?
Iron Man?
Well, it's a fine example of Mecha. I mean, it wasn't really intended to be. When you break down the comics, at the end of the day, it was Stan trying to figure out a way to give a guy superpowers in a different origin that he'd already used. It's the whole reason he got lazy and made mutants. But still, Iron Man's pretty awesome. And to go that route, Sentinels.
Yeah, Sentinels are pretty nifty.
Yep, dumb as a stump in the 90s cartoon.
Well, that was part of the fun. Like, you established that they were a legitimate threat. Except for the part where, a 15-year-old girl could outsmart them.
It appears to be the ace of spades. Boom.
AI is kind of a crapshoot.
Yeah.
Well,
here's YouTube greatest hits of the failing of Sentinels from the 90s cartoon. And they're great.
Iron Man, if you ever look at the origins of, or the original Iron Man, what he was supposed to be, he's all, for all intents and purposes, Howard Hughes.
Yep.
I am, the great, I can create all this cool stuff, and he was going to make machines and stuff he could fly around in, and then it kind of evolved into a mecha show or mecha cartoon or mecha comic book. The original Iron Man costume or the Iron Man suit was basically a big-ass trash can with guns on it.
Yeah. Well, the Mark One was great, man. It was bulky as hell. It was ungainly as sin. It had roller skates.
Yeah. I mean, it made no damn sense.
It was fantastic. It had a skirt.
I mean, the Mark One in
powered by electricity.
The Mark One in the TV, I mean, in the movies, was pretty cool.
Really?
But go back and look at the original Mark One in the comic books, and try not to laugh.
The Mark 1 and the Mark 2, because the Mark 2 was just the Mark 1, but gold.
Right.
Well, yeah.
I mean, Stan Lee, when he was made Iron Man, when he made Tony Stark, he made Howard Hughes, that he didn't have to say, he's Howard Hughes, but we don't have to pay Howard Hughes any money to use his character type or his likeness.
Yeah.
Well, and he was...
We'll give him a mustache.
The interesting thing about it was Stan Lee at this point is almost 50.
Yeah.
And he knows his readership is teenagers, and he sees the hippies outside his office. He's like, you know what? No, I'm going to make you give a fuck about a war profiteer.
Yeah.
Let's make the industrialist important.
Let's make him a character that you feel bad about. Let's make him this tragic, almost monstrous figure.
Well, see, Marvel tries to make you relate to their characters. Best example of this is Spider-Man, because for all intents and purposes, he is us with superpowers.
Parker,
he's a nerd who got superpowers.
Yeah.
Iron Man, or Tony Stark, is not the everyman. He's anything but. He is a genius. He's all-powerful. He's rich beyond his wildest dreams. And he gets to fly around a mech suit. But they give him one crucial problem that pretty much anyone can relate to. He's a drunk.
Yep.
He has that one flaw, and it's a big-ass flaw.
Hereditary alcoholism. It's why I was pissed off when they said he got over it.
You don't get over it.
No.
I mean, that's the best thing about it is, you say, he's got over it. He's no longer alcoholic.
No.
But all it takes is one fall off that wagon, and everything
Demon
goes
in
right
a bottle?
Back to hell.
Demon in a bottle, despite the fact that it's always phrased as an arc,
is a single
issue in the 70s.
Yeah.
And it is
it's one hell of an issue.
Painful ride. Like, it's 30 fucking pages of watch as we grind a man down and then try to rebuild him. And it's fantastic storytelling, and it's great for the character.
And it has almost nothing to do with Iron Man, and you don't care.
No.
It has everything to do with Tony Stark.
Like, Tony Stark does not punch any communists in that comic, but we all love it.
Yep. It's held up as one of the greatest Iron Man stories anytime it's referenced. We saw it building in the films, and then they walked away from it. It's part of the reason I was always hoping they were going to put in Bethany Cade. Because Pepper, as much as they've retooled her for the films, Pepper would not have the guts to look Tony in the eye and go, if you pick up that bottle, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Beth does. Beth looks him straight in the eye, says that, and Stark collapses on the floor in front of her. She's like, if you want to fight through this, I will stay, but if you're going to choose the bottle over me, I'm not staying here. I'm not going to protect you.
I mean,
it's amazing storytelling.
I mean, you see that kind of storytelling all the time now. I mean, in TV shows and movies. Back when that came out, you just didn't see that.
No. Well, you didn't talk about alcoholism.
Right.
Alcoholism wasn't a thing. Dad got home and he had a drink.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if he hit mom, well, you know.
Well, Patrick Stewart.
He probably did something to deserve it.
Patrick Stewart told a really great story about that. His father had post-traumatic stress syndrome from the war. He got drunk a lot, and he came home, and he beat his wife.
Yep.
And Patrick Stewart saw it when he was a kid. He saw it all the time, and they said the police, you know, sometimes the neighbors would call the police when he got even, you know, wilder than usual, and the police would show up and talk to his wife and said, "Ma'am, you must have said something to upset him," as if she was the problem. But that's
the way the
world worked back then.
Yeah, and I mean, to a point, the statement's true. It does take two to have a fight, except Patrick Stewart's father was fighting a war that he never actually got to leave.
Right.
Well, and she just happened to be a victim in that case.
Well, that's the thing about post-traumatic stress syndrome. If you don't get it treated, it just doesn't, you know, you don't get over it.
Yeah, you're still at the war.
It's still there for eternity, and then.
Yeah.
Especially in people like a war. I mean, I remember watching a documentary on Larry Bird. Larry Bird's father went to war in Korea. He came back, and he had nightmares for the rest of his life about whatever he saw there. He never talked about it, but he saw something god-awful horrible there, and eventually he took his own life because of it. Sometimes you got to deal with that shit.
Yeah.
And Tony Stark's a good example of someone who had no choice but to deal with that shit.
Well, it cost him everything. Like, by the time you get to Demon in a Bottle, he's lost Stark International. He's already been proven that Iron Man does not need him because he got so wasted in the fucking suit that Rhodey had to fly it.
Right.
Like, Stark knows everything that he's built his fragile ego upon can be taken from him in a heartbeat. The only friend he's got left is the booze.
Right.
And that's not true.
That's not a friend, it's a crutch.
No, that's the thing that's cost him everything up to this point. Right. Beth and Jarvis are the only people still standing there because even Rhodey's walked away by then.
Right.
Again, fantastic storytelling. And, I mean, addresses a real-world issue very directly. But at the time, you wouldn't talk about this shit.
Yeah.
That's kind of one of the virtues of fiction, is you can hold up that mirror. And you don't have to say to a person, this is what you're living with, but you can show them in a different way.
Well, the reason you don't talk about it, or you didn't talk about it in real life, is you didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings. You didn't want to, you know, insult anyone. You didn't want to go down that path and make someone feel bad. Nobody cares if Tony Stark feels bad. No. He doesn't exist.
Exactly.
So he's a good example of how to do this, you know, how to talk about this, how to talk about it in the open. Because Tony Stark's, you know, reputation gets damaged. He's not real. Who gives a damn?
Now, especially, they'll just write it differently next month.
Right.
Or
we
next
can,
year.
You know, we can change. We can make his reputation better next week because things change.
Yeah. Wow, we got off topic.
Wow, that.
Surprisingly, we are still somewhat on topic, though.
Somewhat, but it's also a good topic to be on.
This is true.
On a general level. Because we went somewhere adult, boys and girls.
Yeah.
I'm not sorry.
But I'm going to try and bring this back.
Bring us home.
Mecha shows in general, what makes mecha shows really good is not the mechs. Mechs are what bring you to the table. The characters are what keep you there. I mean, we can think about all the great Gundam shows we've ever talked about. How many, they're great mecha battles. Yeah, they're great Gundams. How many great characters have we seen that we've, you know, loved and still talk about to this day? Despite the fact that we showed up to see the Gundams, we're still talking about Char. We're still talking about Amuro. We're still talking about Camille. Same thing applies in American mechs. We're still talking about Optimus Prime. We're still talking about Dinobot dying all those years ago. We're still talking about Tony Stark and his problems with the booze.
And that's it. Like, we actually have said this quite directly at the Gundam panel. Scott and I have sat there when people are like, no, well, the robots are what matter.
Yeah, there's like, one guy who really seems to get upset with us for not talking about, for basically breaking kayfabe about the whole thing.
Yeah.
But you don't show up to watch Gundam, to watch Camille, you don't show up to watch Amuro, you just show up to watch the Gundam battles. But that only can hold your attention for so long.
Well, that's it. It's a 5-minute clip show. Like, you run that on YouTube now. Gundam does not have the staying power it has if we just look at, you know, the opening bit of it with the Gundam fighting the Zakus. The scenes of death when the Zaku open fire, when, you know, Frau loses everybody behind her and she's weeping and Amuro's like, you need to fucking go.
Yeah.
Because we're not going to get out of here alive if you can't stand up and run. Those are the scenes that stick with you. Those are the stories that matter. Optimus Prime finally willing to cross that line with regards to Megatron when he's walking at him and says, one shall stand and one shall fall. Because he's finally committed himself to it. We can't do this anymore. You have killed scores of Autobots before I got here and you're not going to stop. We're done. The game is over. I'm ending this.
Well, we're getting...
And that's right there. Actually, that's one of the reasons I didn't like Bay's Transformers. I didn't find any of that heart was present.
Well, here's the thing. The main characters were not the robots. They never had an arc. It was, they tried to give... In Transformers 1, they tried to give this cast of thousands and have each one have their storyline. And it fell apart because, you know, they didn't have the writers to really make us care. And
you would need to mesh it better, and they didn't. It was a bunch of semi-individual stories all occurring in the same event, and not even told in a way that makes that interesting.
And then Transformers 2, where you could theoretically have an arc about Optimus coming back from the dead or something, you just had, you know, you just had Shia LaBeouf and his hand injury. And I never saw 3 because I'm like, no, Michael Bay, you don't get my money for Transformers anymore. Transformers movies anymore. We'll see what else you can come up with.
Yeah.
It's sad now that I think about that is, I've liked Transformers 1, but if you said, hey, you want to watch Transformers the movie back in 86, or you want to watch Transformers 1 Bayformer, I'm still going to go with the 86 movie.
And the 86 movie is only good for about the first half hour and the last half hour.
Yeah, and there's a whole lot of crap in the middle nobody gives a damn about.
That's because it's Rodimus.
Well, I don't even mind Rodimus. I never even mind Rodimus that much because I always thought it was a passing of the torch type thing.
That didn't work.
The problem
out.
Is they didn't let that stand on its own for very long. They said, you know what? Nobody likes this. Just bring Optimus back.
Well, I always found it really entertaining.
And then bring him back up again, and then kill him, and then bring him back up again.
You go from a hot rod, this speedy fucking awesome car, and you get the Matrix of leadership, which should jack you the fuck up. And he's like,
turns him into
bam,
a Winnebago.
Winnebago.
Yeah.
Winnebago. Okay,
that never made sense when say, okay, Matrix of Leadership adds a trailer. What?
What does that mean Orion Pax was? Like, was he a scooter? Is this how Transformer males attract their mate? They get a matrix of leadership and all of a sudden they're jacked to fuck? Like, are Transformer females attracted to a large trailer? Is this all some sort of penis symbolism that we haven't spotted before? What the fuck is going on?
It's like peacocks,
Optimus Primal,
man,
had the matrix of leadership for like 20 minutes and he turned from a gorilla into some freaking gorilla crossed with a crane from a construction yard.
Yeah, God knows what the fuck that was.
Not to mention, I never quite understood, wait a minute, if Optimus Prime is, you know, so much bigger than you, shouldn't the matrix of leadership be as big as you are?
Yes.
And they shove that in there.
Should be about 6 feet high.
Right. It's like, wait a minute, there's no way the matrix of leadership is fitting inside you. It's almost as big as you.
Standardized Transformers rules. They are as big as the next nearest noun.
I guess.
So, in Prime's case, it was fucking enormous because he is the nearest noun. And the moment Primal got to it, he is now the nearest noun. So it just shrinks down.
Yeah. I suppose I'm thinking a little too hard when Megatron transforms into a Luger and then goes, you know, down to the size so another Transformer can pick him up. Damn physics.
I love that. Conservation of mass, you can go fuck yourself.
Pocket dimension.
I always remember,
pocket dimension.
I always remember a Transformer I had when I was a kid called Six Shot. He transformed into six different things. Like he was a tank and a car. And then he transformed into a gun. And I was like, why would he transform from a tank into a gun? No one can pick that gun up. But then in the cartoon, sure enough, he gets picked right up. I'm like, oh. Even then, my, you know, 6-7-year-old brain was thinking, how does that work?
That's not normal.
but he didn't shrink. What? And that was my first lesson in physics.
Yeah.
And well, then you can also look at the fact that Soundwave goes from a gigantic tape deck to a tape deck that I can pick up whenever it's convenient.
Yeah, well.
Ravage goes from the size of a Jaguar relative to a Transformer to really just the size of a Jaguar, depending on who he's planning on attacking that scene.
Yeah, well, physics.
And somehow never crushes any of them either.
Yeah.
Like, lands on a human, both paws right on the shoulders. Human's arms are still perfectly usable.
Mm.
Should probably be pulp.
See, I guess I never quite figured that out, but since I had the toy of Six Shot, and I could transform into a gun, then when I saw it on the thing, wait a minute. Now I've got it in my hands, and I'm like, this doesn't make sense. Tactile contact apparently helps me figure things out. There's a joke in there somewhere, but I'm not sure what it is. Anyway.
I'm going to call this an episode. I think we're good.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside is released under an attribution, non-commercial, share-alike 3.0 International Creative Commons license. Please visit our website at sbopodcast.blogspot.com for more episodes as well as social media information. Thank you.